Broadcasting from a radioactive bunker deep inside the Bracket compound, this is Show Spoilers Episode 15, Westworld Season 2, Episode 3. I'm Kevin Brackett, and I'm joined, as always, by Brad Hyen. Hey, Brad.
Hey, Kevin. How's it going?
It's going well, thank you. Another exciting episode of Westworld. Dare I say, the best episode of the season? I'm kind of leaning towards I really enjoyed this one.
They keep getting better and better for me. Like, I really liked last week a lot, I thought, even more than the first episode. And this one is just continuing that trend of getting better.
Yeah, I think they're really getting into the swing of things. And, of course, I don't know how they film them, you know, what parts they film first. They usually film by location. But whatever it is, whether it be the editor or whoever's putting these things together, I really feel like it's getting exciting. I think the acting, of course, as always, was top notch. There's a lot of great stuff to talk about. But before we get into that, let's do some housekeeping. So you can subscribe to us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google Play, wherever your fine podcasts are given away for free. And, we really do appreciate it if you can leave us a review. Sites like iTunes, especially Stitcher, the more reviews that you get, the more there is a chance that your podcast will show up when people search for keywords like Westworld. And it just helps people know that you're listening to us and helps share it as well. So we appreciate any reviews that you can do on any of the podcast programs. Of course, follow us at All the Spoilers on Twitter. And you can email us your theories, your questions, your corrections. We don't care. Email us about anything you want. Westworld related, of course, but we love to hear from the listeners and we love to answer your questions. So email us at theshowspoilers@gmail.com. Remember to put the in there because there's probably some other podcast with show spoilers. I don't know why that's taken already, but theshowspoilers@gmail.com. And speaking of listener emails, Brad, we have an email.
Great. Who's it from?
This is from Linnea Thunzel. You'll probably recognize her from the League of Show Sharers. So if you listen to Real Spoilers, which is maybe one of the ways that you got to this podcast, we do a weekly movie podcast over there where we usually review the biggest movie of the week and we spoil it just like we do the television shows. And facebook.com/Real Spoilers is the page. And we also have the League of Show Sharers on there. So Westworld people, television people, doesn't matter. Join the League of Show Sharers and we discuss everything pop culture, entertainment related. A lot of fun discussion there. But Linnea writes into us and she says, "Hey guys, loving the podcast. I love Westworld. I'm so excited about season two because my fiance made me watch season one with him. So we binged it after the first season it concluded. And then he spoiled it for me like halfway through. What a dick." So yeah, not cool Linnea's fiance, but still. This time we're watching Sunday night as it airs and he learned to keep his mouth shut. Anyways, I'm loving the interaction between Lee and Maeve this season. I am too.
Yep.
Lee is such a douchebag, but I can't help but to feel bad for him, like all the other humans there, because they didn't think the hosts were or could be sentient. Lee especially was against making them more lifelike, and then he almost gets killed by his own characters. I loved in the season premiere when Maeve threatens to cut off a vital organ and then makes him eat it, and he says, "I wrote that line for you." So good. I agree as well. I do miss Maeve's interaction with Felix, though, and I really hope he's alive somewhere. He was one of my favorite characters in season one. Anyways, I can't wait to see what this season has in store. Well, Linnea, as you know by now,
you're in luck.
You're in luck because we see Felix. I was thinking the same thing. Please give us Felix and Sylvester. And then Linnea actually, she wrote back in, I think it was either late last night or early today. And she said, "I just had to add, yay, Felix."
Yeah, so, I was happy to see him too. I can't wait to get to that part.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, thank you, Linnea. Again, we love hearing from listeners. Just tell us, things that you love about the season, what your favorite parts are. Again, if you have theories about where it's going, put on your tinfoil hats, join me. At least I'll have someone on my team as Brad is sensible and logical over there on the other end. But we'll get our theories. I know. We'll get our theories going and we'll figure out what's happening this season. But yes, thank you so much, Linnea. And another friend from the League of Show Shares, Lane LeVanway, gives us a quick tweet. We posted that we were recording this today, and he tweeted at us that he just watched the first episode this season. So I gave him a challenge. I said, "Bonus points if you could tell us what you think will happen in episodes 2 and 3 right now." He responded, and Brad, let's see if he gets any of these right. I quote, "Part crossover, Man in Black gets a partner, lots of death, very little boobs." Quote.
That is, yeah, I couldn't think of anything less accurate.
I mean, episodes 2 and 3, that's pretty much what happens. Yeah, they said this season, pertaining to the nudity part, they said this season that they were not going to show as much nudity. I think it was really effective in season one, because nudity wasn't meant just to be like, hey, look at all these naked people. The nudity was meant to dehumanize the hosts. Of course, you have that great interaction between Ford and one of the employees of Westworld when they're fixing one of the hosts, and there were others as well. But he says this is a thing; it's not a person, because the worker covers up the man's privates with like a towel, and Ford hates that. It makes him really irritated, and so he has that great little speech with him. And other times we've learned that the thing is they're naked when they work on them; they're always naked. And it really drives the point home that, yes, even though these act like humans, they look like humans, they have all the parts and everything, but they are just things. They're objects, and them being on display, it should not be embarrassing. They don't have any feelings that way. And, you know, it was used that way. Now, of course, season two is about, you know, hosts gone wild. Well, that actually sounds like it has more nudity than it does. The hosts are doing their own thing, and they are not being controlled by the humans in this season. So it would make sense that first of all, we aren't seeing them being worked on, which is when they're usually naked. Right. And two, it's more about them finding what they think is consciousness or making their own decisions and becoming more human. So that evolution means that we're not going to see as much nudity.
Yeah, and to add to that, like you said, a lot of the nudity in the first season was being as they're being worked on, and I think the majority of it was when they were all warehoused, you know, in one of those floors, just standing there.
Oh yeah.
And now they're not there. They're not being worked on. They're not in the warehouse. They're taking over. You know, so yeah. There's not really a lot of cause for any nudity to be prevalent this season, you know.
For sure, and I mean that those warehouse scenes, the cold storage that you're referring to. That has to be the most nudity since something like Caligula. Like, I mean, there are like 200 people there. I'm guessing they're extras.
200 hosts, Kevin.
Oh, sorry about that. I'm a little more progressive than Brad. It's 2018. I want to refer to them as people. I was rooting for Dolores to fall in love with William and escape the park and live happily ever after.
Are you rooting for her now, Kevin?
Well, you know my stance on that. She went T2, T1000 on everybody. I started to feel a little less supportive of that. Sure. But, you know, I think of them as people, Brad. They are just as much. No. But, yeah, that was a lot of nudity. And so that was all at one time. So, yeah, I think that was a great sequence, not to get too much into it. But from the season one finale, when I think it was Lee actually goes down to cold storage and he opens it up, and we're used to seeing hundreds of hosts naked and just decommissioned there, and there's no one in the entire place. Such a great scene.
Sure.
So anyway, thanks, Lane. Spot on with that theory. I don't know, he's some kind of clairvoyant. I don't know how he has that ability.
Might be a writer for the show.
Yeah, right. Lane, do you write for, and why haven't you seen episodes 2 and 3 yet? If you
can, you hook us up with the rest of them, please.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, thanks, Lane. And again, you can tweet at us anytime at All the Spoilers and email us at theshowspoilers@gmail.com. So let's get into this episode. You know, one of the things that is great about the experience, just like we talked about how Lost was so fun, and we had the message boards, and we had all the little viral marketing and augmented reality, all that stuff, you know, from back in the day where the Lost people would try to add little, little clever marketing campaigns that interfaced with the show. They do that so well with Westworld. Westworld has a complex website. It has an email list. They have a Twitter account that will tweet you little hints and little images and videos from things that are happening around the park that may not even be on the show or not focused on in the show, but they'll email you like you're a customer or, you know, as you're a patron of Westworld, and they'll say, hey, this thing is down, or, oh, there's some chaos at the park, or this is closed for now. Keep updated when things will be back and available for you. So it's really neat. And if you want to go to their website, if you haven't, I implore you to. It's DelosDestinations.com, and they update it at the end of every show. They always add more and more to keep you like this stuff's happening in real time. And so really neat, since the season started, they've started adding the parks, the other parks that we know exist out there. They've started adding details and descriptions as we learn about them. And so right now, if you go to DelosDestinations.com, there's a tab that says Experiences. and there are listings there for 6 parks. They go in order: Westworld, then the second one is Shogun World. So I don't know that we mentioned on the website, but we thought it was called Shogun World, so confirmed, right. And it's Shogun World. Parks 3 through 5 say they're closed to the public. So those are either new parks under construction or I don't know what's going on there, but hopefully throughout this season, we'll be able to find out. I think we have some guesses, Brad, Jurassic Park and and then Game of Thrones World. I think those are 2 of the big predictions.
Westeros World. Yeah,
yep, exactly.
Well, we did get a dragon this episode.
I know. I was so excited about that. What a great line. It's so fantastic. In the 6th and final park, there's 6 listed there. So I'm guessing that is the official number for now, at least, is the Raj, which I believe earlier in the season, they referred to it as Raj World. Was that correct?
Yeah, I think after the Super Bowl promotional material came out, somebody cracked the code on the website and it showed Raj World behind all the glitches. If you mouse over parks 3 through 5 right now, there's glitches on them right now. So yeah. I don't know if it has the same kind of coding as the Raj World one did, but that's what it was called in the in the promotional material.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. Talk about how frequently they update these websites. So I went to the website earlier before this recording and I was trying to get some information and take some notes for the podcast. And then I went back and refreshed the website and they had already changed it. So you used to be able to, and maybe when you're listening to this, they'll update it again, but you used to be able to hover over the picture of each park. And there was a one button that said, find more information. And then there was another tab that said, make a reservation. And then there was another tab. I think there were 3 buttons. One of them said, do something else. And now all you can do is click on the picture. And I think it brings you, like, the Westworld site is fully functional, or at least has a lot of information. Because that was even around last season. It takes you to discoverwestworld.com. But the other sites, like Shogun World, you can't even click on. And then when you go to the Raj World or the Raj website, discovertheraj.com, it's just like a little buggy video that doesn't really do much. So I actually was going to read some of the descriptions and I wasn't able to get them down in time. So I only have like a very small synopsis from each one. But check back on that later at DelosDestinations.com. They might have it back up, but there was actually a lot more info. So the synopsis that we do have for each park is Westworld says, experience the first vacation destination where you can live without limits. Meticulously crafted and artfully designed, our park offers an unparalleled immersive world where you have the freedom to become who you've always wanted to be. Then we go over to Shogun World, and it says, for those whom Westworld is not enough, the true connoisseur of gore can indulge their fantasies with the slash of a katana. Modeled after Japan's Edo period, Shogun World offers a chance for guests to embrace their inner warrior in a landscape of highest beauty and darkest horror. Let your true self take shape in the land where self-discovery is an art form. Now, I did click on this earlier, and I believe what the more information said was this was the most advanced park. I couldn't find it again when I went back to it, so maybe they'll update that. Or maybe they did it too early and I saw something I wasn't supposed to, but there's more of a description, and I think it said that Shogun World is the most advanced. And I would guess that's because there are samurai who are obviously very skilled and trained warriors, right. And you have to handle a sword instead of just pointing a gun. So
and you got to program these hosts to do it authentically and everything as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you have a samurai functioning like a samurai warrior would, I mean, watch some of those movies. Watch Kill Bill and see if you think you could be like a bum off the street going to Kill Bill and try to fight those guys, right?
I want to see that world. I really do.
I know. I hope we get to it. But my feeling is we're going to have maybe a little glimpse, but I feel like we're going to have everyone converging on Westworld. But
yeah, that's what it feels like. And we'll get into it this episode as well. But Westworld's very much the prime spot for the show. I mean, it's called Westworld,
right?
For God's sake. So I think we're going to spend most of our time there. But these other worlds are very, very appealing.
Very interesting. And speaking of other worlds, though, we did get a look at the Raj. So they did show us this. And so maybe they will do little glimpses. But we go over to the Raj and it says, if being pampered by our world-class spa isn't your cup of Darjeeling tea, the park's jungles and mountains are your only chance to glimpse magnificent beasts long vanished from your world. So interestingly enough, we see, I believe, maybe there are little glimpses, but we see 2 beasts, what I would call beasts. We see elephants that they ride, and we see these Bengal tigers. So are we to believe that in this world that Bengal tigers and elephants are extinct?
That's what I was going to touch on, was that the last line of that description I feel like is pretty significant as to what actually exists in the real world today. Bengal tigers and elephants certainly still exist now. We know that the show takes place 30 years in the future, but yeah, if you have to go to Raj to is your only place to see those, it's kind of,
well, it's interesting. sounds kind of like another Michael Crichton property, doesn't it?
Right, like Jurassic Park, yeah.
Right. The thing is that they never, one thing that's interesting about this show is we don't have dates. So even though we know time periods as far as year jumps, we know that the current QA, Bernard and Charlotte time period is 11 days, 11 and a half days after the whole massacre at the park with the board. We know those time frames, but we don't know dates. They never say, oh, Arnold and Bernard are working on these hosts in 1972, and then we go 30 years forward.
I think we do. If the research that I did today, and then I'm pretty sure that they referenced a scene where Bernard was looking at a tablet. I don't know if it was this episode or not, because I didn't catch it in the episode. I caught it through a Reddit comment, which I didn't cite. But the
tell me, because that's interesting. Yeah. I've never caught a date on in this show. Like real.
Bernard looks at a tablet at one point that says 2052.
Really?
I believe is what I read today.
I wonder if that's a red herring or just a 2052 number of something. I'm going to have to look that up because I've never seen it. But if that's so, then even the William flashbacks would be 2020. They'd be further than we are now.
Right.
So yeah, let's look into that. That's really interesting. That would be a perfect question. If one of the listeners wants to let us know their theory or if they've caught years on anything, I feel kind of bad if I miss something that's that significant. But again, I go pretty in depth into my research and I've just never seen a date. Like I would feel like if there was a date, I would know like, yeah, the show is in this year, but,
right.
But anyway, so that is your summary of all three of the six parks that we know exist in the Delos Destinations park. So we mentioned before, if you've ever seen the movie Westworld or the movie's Future World, Delos is the name of the park in the movies. And then they go to either Westworld, Future World, Medieval World, all that stuff. But and this, we get the idea that Delos Destinations is the name of the company, like going to Disney World. And then Westworld is the Epcot or the Animal Kingdom, you know, the actual park within the company. So check back on the website. They're always updating it, especially after each episode, which is so fun to see. The things that you've just seen in the episode actually take place when there was like last year at the end of the season finale, once the big massacre went down and all the crazy stuff in that finale, the website was like, you know, we're experiencing technical difficulties and there were a bunch of errors everywhere. You know, they're just really good about making it feel like, you know, is again, it's that augmented reality. Like you are a patron and they are emailing you to let you know that stuff is going on.
Right.
All right, so let's get into the episode. This was a great episode. I think it may be my favorite of the season, and I really enjoyed one and two. But like Brad said, they're getting better and better. And this one does something that they did last week, and I wonder if this is going to become something, even though with the first episode, they did the recap instead of giving us a scene before the intro. But last episode, we got a little scene before the intro, and we did again here. And it was quite a lengthy one. It was about a 10-minute sequence, and it was everything and everybody that we hadn't seen before. I take that back. There's one animal that we have seen before. But other than that, it was pretty much new stuff. So, yeah, we see pretty much everything that's new here. We see Raj World. So we're taken to this beautiful-looking building, and people are out on the courtyard. You know, it looks like some palace, and people are drinking tea. It looks like a lot of older people. What I got from this, a lot of people looked like they were wearing, I don't know if I would call it safari outfits, but like it was a lot of older men and they're wearing like hats and vests, things that kind of reminded me of a safari. And we're introduced to a couple of characters here. And one of them is Nicholas. And when he sits down at the table with this other new character, Grace, he just presumes that she's there to hunt. And he says, yeah, me too. And so my thought is that you're not just going to Raj World to enjoy, like they said, the tea and to look at the animals. I feel like these are a way for these big game hunters, like all the terrible people that are out there going to other countries to try to hunt these animals that are extinct. I feel like this is a way that they can hunt these crazy extinct wild animals. But also the nice part about it is you're not damaging a real living animal. It's a host animal, right?
Right. Yeah, that's how I took it as well.
So yeah, we get an idea of the clientele that's there, but these are two younger characters. And I will tell you what, it was crazy. I don't know if you got this feeling at all, but as soon as Nicholas sits down at the table with Grace, she really reminded me of Teresa Cullen from last season.
Oh, no, I never thought about that.
So think about this. So Teresa Cullen smoked in almost every scene. That doesn't mean they're the same character if two characters smoke. But this young lady looks a lot like Teresa Cullen. If you look at their faces, and Teresa was smoking and she's smoking. So I think that automatically just painted that picture in my head like, whoa, what is going on here? I don't know what that would mean. I mean, the time frame, obviously Teresa's gone. The only thing I could think of, if we were going to try to make a connection off the top of my head, if they took her DNA, like we know that Delos does, they're using guest experiences and DNA, and they made a host off her DNA, but made her in the younger years. And this was somehow a host. That's the only way that I could possibly think of a connection there.
Yeah. And yeah, now that you say that, like, I really like that theory, but I'm trying to place a timeline where it could actually be a younger her. I spent the entire opening scene here, guessing back and forth who's a host and who's not. And I ultimately came to the decision that both of them, well, we know, which you'll get into, that the man is real.
Oh, absolutely. We can just say that right now. I mean, so the thing is, they have a really interesting interaction, one that we've never seen between two guests, and that's a kind of a sexual, kind of a romantic, him hitting on her and her taking him back to her place. We've never seen that with two guests. We've always seen that between a host and a guest, which obviously is one of the fantasies that they're living out within the park. So this is a brand new thing. And this woman, whenever they're in her bedroom, she starts to wonder, you know, I think he even says something like, I wouldn't put it past them to you know, make us think that the hosts are another guest. And, and she's looking in the mirror. And at this point in time, I instantly thought she was a host and she was trying to coerce him, you know, kind of fool him into thinking that she was human. At this point in time, I really think we're led to believe that they are both guests, but we don't actually get confirmation. There's nothing that says at this point that she's a guest. Right?
The only thing that got me believing that they were both guests was, of course, he survives the gunshot test. And then when she walks into the tent and sees some of the other guests dead after riding in on the elephants, she mentions how she rode in on the train with them. They're guests. They shouldn't be dead.
That's true. Now, I completely 100% agree. Everything that she's said will lead us to believe that she's a guest.
Right.
Now, this show is tricky, and they've done this to us before. Who else rides in on the train every day? Teddy rides into the train to Westworld every day, right?
Yep.
Sure. What hosts think that they're human and really aren't all of them? I mean, you know, like, so, and I'm not saying you're wrong because
that's a really good counterpoint. I didn't even think about Teddy writing in every day.
So yeah. So are they fooling us? That's a question. I don't even have a theory on it. At this point, I believe they're both hosts, that they're both guests, which is interesting, but we don't actually have confirmation. But you're right. After they sleep together, the test, first of all, is kind of crazy. I'm like, this woman is crazy, but she makes a good point. She's like, she shows all these weapons that she has, because I guess she's there to hunt too, and she's got all these interesting weapons. I will say on a side note, her weapons are older looking, and so that's the only thing that would make me question, like, what time period is this?
Right.
Although when she's washed up by the water, you know, and when the tiger is washed up, we're dealing with characters and a time period that we believe is current, so I don't think there's a time jump here, but she has all these older, intricate-looking weapons. Maybe she just thinks they're cool. But she pulls this gun and she's like pointing it at him and she's like, hey, if you're human, it will just sting a little bit or leave a bruise. And if you're not, then, well, you won't remember any of this.
Exactly.
So I'm like, oh, this woman's crazy. But she ends up shooting him. My first thought was like, damn, let him put a shirt or a vest on or something. Because think about it. Like in the past, we've seen guests get shot, like Man in Black the most, I think. And it's like when you get shot, it leaves a bruise. But he's got like two or three layers of clothes on and it's shooting him through them. This guy is like naked in front of her or has his shirt off. She just shoots him point blank in the chest. I'm like, geez, that is cold right there.
And that, you know, that just adds to, I really like your theory of it being Teresa, because like she was kind of a blunt woman in the first season too, like getting right to the point, wasn't she?
Oh, personality wise. Absolutely. Yeah.
Like that would be something she would do.
I agree. She was very to the point, very business, you know, I mean, she was in management, but I mean, she was, you know, so in both, from both sides of the coin there, she was all business. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see if that turns into anything. I don't know.
If she's not a host, you got me thinking that there's a big time jump there where that's a young Teresa now. I'm going to have to do some more homework on that.
Yeah, go look at the scene when you're introduced to her and just look at the face and look at the cigarette. And it's like, geez, just kind of clicked in my mind. But so you mentioned that they rode elephants in. They looked like real elephants. I think they were really riding them. I know that people do ride elephants.
Yeah.
So it looked real to me. If it's CG, then congratulations.
I'll say this. They looked a lot more real than that tiger did.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, that's kind of like the dragons in Game of Thrones. I mean, they're cool, but I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Clearly they're not real, but it's like that CG could probably use a little bit of extra work sometimes.
Right, yeah. It wasn't bad, but it was enough to make me be like, okay.
It was no Jungle Book.
Yeah, it wasn't a Jungle Book.
If you want to see the most incredible CG animals, especially tigers and animals like that from the jungle, that Jon Favreau Jungle Book is incredible.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what they do with the Lion King.
Absolutely. So they get off the elephants and then they go to a little camp there. And so they each have a host that's like their assistant, you know, as they go on their tour here, and they duck into these tents in this eating area. And right away, Grace noticed that something's not right here. She says it's too quiet. And, you know, Nicholas tries to say something like, oh, maybe it's part of a new narrative. Maybe they're doing something else. But she's like, no, that's not it. And when she's inside of this tent, they see two dead people, quote unquote. Nicholas presumes that they're just hosts and that
right.
It's part of the story. But she starts to say, no, like she's clearly not. She knows they're not, but she can't get the words out fast enough. And then up from behind her walks her valet or whoever her assistant is. He's got them both at gunpoint.
Yep.
And so it's like, oh, crap. Stuff's going down here, too. This is the first actual confirmation we have. We could assume that the hosts everywhere had gone crazy, but we didn't know the other parks for sure that, you know, had the Violent Delights thing going on. But when he comes up behind her, his name's Ganju. He actually draws his weapon and says, these violent delights have violent ends. So that's the answer to that question right there. All the parks are going crazy.
Yeah, it was. It took me off guard for a second. Is that the first time we've heard that line this season? That violent
I believe ends? So. Yeah. And we hear another iteration of it later, too. So they were really hammering that one home. But we lose Nicholas pretty quickly. He is super dead. He gets shot like point blank in the chest by Ganju. I thought that maybe these two were going to be new characters and we'd be following them. I think Grace clearly is going to be the one we follow, but rest in peace, Nicholas. And so Grace is running through the jungle. She ends up seeing this tiger, you know, kind of like this is a total Jurassic Park homage too.
Sure.
This is the clever girl scene with the raptors and the tiger's poking out of the bushes and he goes and chases her down and she ends up running with him behind her to a cliff. And so at this point it's you either jump or you get eaten by a tiger. So she ends up, the tiger lunges her and it cuts to black. And so we know now, right from this moment, it's like, okay, that's how the tiger gets to Westworld. Done.
Right. Can we back up 1 second before moving on?
Yeah. Yeah.
The, Nicholas, the whole scene there where she shoots him and he's not affected by it because he's a guest.
Yeah.
Are we to believe that something flips between the bedroom and the safari to where he's able to be killed by a host?
No, that's that's interesting point. That actually would lead me to believe that Grace is a human because humans can't. I mean, usually hosts can't kill guests, and usually guests can't kill other guests. But as we know from this season, all the guests that have been reprogrammed or off their loop with the Violent Delights thing. They don't have those directives. So I think it's something to do with the programming. Like okay. It's unlocked by either the host that has the programming or if you're a human, you know, it's something to do with that. And we know that any of the Violent Delights unlocked hosts are the ones that are killing humans. So that would mean either that she, if she is a host, she's not unlocked. And if she is a guest, then yeah, they can't kill each other. Think of that confusion there, right there. Like,
that makes sense now that you've explained it.
Yeah, in season one, I thought about this. They're like, okay, so you know that hosts can't kill guests. Like, that's a given, right? I mean, usually. But what if guests, they're out there in the Wild West, everyone's dressed up like a cowboy. Right. You know, a guest walks over and other guests are shooting each other. And oh my gosh, the legal ramifications of that.
Yeah, no kidding.
The last thing we should mention before we move on here is that we see Grace run through what looks like a laser, a little laser grid of some sort. Clearly, because of the PA announcement going on that says, attention, you have reached the boundary of guest experience. Please turn back. Clearly, this thing is supposed to keep things out of whatever area that she was running into, which looked like a bridge that would go between parks, probably. And we see the tiger walk right through this laser. So the idea that I had was that either one, it would tell their programming to turn around if they got that far, or two, it would detonate some kind of explosive and render them, you know, useless, so that, you know, you can't have them running around. You shouldn't have tigers in Westworld, just like Stubbs says when he found it, like, this has never happened before. So, all right. So anything else that you can think of before we leave Raj World for now?
No, the only thing that I'm thinking about at the moment about Raj World is maybe its size, considering we've seen a lot. We've seen a lot of Westworld, and we've never dealt with any anybody getting close to the border. So yeah, maybe Raj World is significantly smaller, you know, and as we'll find out, on the border of Westworld.
It would make sense if it is. It will be interesting when we see the maps, like the actual large picture map. But, you know, Westworld was the first park, and they were investing all the resources into that. And then I think Delos comes into play. That's probably what we saw in episode 2 whenever William walked out with Dolores and they saw construction. It was probably one of the other parks, would be my guess. And, you know, if they're building other add-on parks, it would make sense that they wouldn't necessarily be as big as the whole main park, because they envision Westworld, I believe, as just the park. Like, there weren't going to be five others at the time. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. They did update. If you go to discoverwestworld.com, that's the Westworld-specific site from Delos, they did update the map with where some of our hosts are. So you can go there. You can see where the different outposts are. You can see where Maeve is, as opposed to some of the other areas. It's really cool to see. You see Abernathy Ranch. You see Sweetwater way up north. So they are east of where that stuff is. So it's kind of neat that you can kind of track where the characters are going and where they've been. So remember to bookmark that and check back after every episode.
Yeah, I like that they do that. They did a really good job. I haven't checked Game of Thrones HBO site in a long time, but they used to have a big family tree of who's who and where, you know, where people are. And they do a really good job of keeping up with their shows and keeping people informed.
It does, and it keeps the audience engaged. It's smart, because not only are we having more of a fun time watching it and discussing it because of that stuff, but it also gets people to share and to say, hey, look at this new map. Hey, look at this new website. I mean, it's just free advertising for the show, and that's good marketing.
Yep.
So we go to the next scene. So after the credits roll, and I watch the credits just to see if there was anything different. So we've got the same opening credits. I don't think those are changing this season. But we go to the QA team. So we've got Strand and his team that have Bernard. This would be current time. And they enter in through a tunnel that leads them to the underground. We see the result of what we're going to find later in this episode. We see a bunch of burnt dead bodies down there. And Charlotte meets up with them. And so at this point, we see that Charlotte and Bernard have been separated. And we're going to see how they get separated this episode. But it's interesting. The words that she says to him, of course, I'm always looking into that deeper secondary meaning, but she says, oh, you made it out alive. I didn't think you had it in you. And then she asks them if they found Abernathy, and Strand says, no, not yet. So he's escaped their clutches once again. And Charlotte turns to Bernard and says, what about you, Bernard? Do you have any idea where Peter Abernathy would have gone? He seems to keep slipping away from us. And it's a very, like, you know, it's a very side-eyed kind of a comment from her. Did you sense there that it was a little bit more than like, oh, darn, that Abernathy keeps escaping from us?
No, I didn't really think much of it, to be honest, at that point. I was still trying to grasp it, where we were at, and which we're about to get to. Clearly, this was, you know, the future of the, or the back end of the 11 days that we're missing. So, yeah, but no, I was just trying to put pieces together, but I didn't think anything significant of it.
Well, I think clearly there's something going on here, is that Charlotte is thinking, either my prediction is that she knows Bernard is a host at this point, She knows something's up, but she's not giving him away, or right. she's suspicious of him. It's just the way that she says that. She's saying it very snidely, like a very sarcastic kind of, oh, he keeps slipping away from us. Like, how do you keep letting this happen, Bernard? So we'll have to see we'll have to see what comes of that. But they do a flashback at this point. So Bernard starts glitching, and we've seen this before, to where Bernard seems to have recovered from whatever was going on in episode one, but clearly he's still having issues, and we see even more why this episode. But we go to Bernard and Charlotte searching for Abernathy. This is close to what we saw in season one, that time frame of those two together, when they leave the secret underground facility. And Bernard says 10 hours ago, he was somewhere over there. And then we see a bunch of people tied up, right? Yeah, these are actually people, Brad, for I got it right that time. We see a whole bunch of the executives from the party tied up, and we see Peter Abernathy. And who else but Rebus and Walter and their gang of bandits are there. This is I really enjoyed this scene. This is one of my favorites, because we get to see Rebus acting differently than we've ever seen him. And
being a good guy.
Yeah, in different media.
Yeah, I've never seen him be a good guy. Besides Walking Dead, Grand Theft Auto, and even in Westworld, nothing ever redeeming about his character. And then
Stephen Ogg is a great actor, and he is a great bad guy. And he's a great character actor, and he's always a bad guy. He has that look. He has that personality where he can really sell it. And it's interesting what we get into here. But they end up luring Rebus over, and Charlotte Hale is kind of sitting by a tree, and he says, "Oh, I'm gonna fetch a lot of money for you." And then Bernard comes over and hits him on the back of the head with a rock, and he plugs in. Bernard always has his handy little tablet and USB port. They cut his arm open, and he plugs in, and it's really funny. Bernard reprograms him and said, "I'm gonna make him into the most virtuous, quickest gun in the West." And I just laughed out loud at this point, even before I saw it, because I'm thinking this character is going to become the most virtuous person. And I just thought, oh my gosh, they're going to turn him into a good guy defending these people. And sure enough, he walks back to his camp, and he just says, "What are you doing to these people? You can't do that." And they're all looking at him like, "What are you talking about?" And instantly he pulls out his guns and he mows down all the bandits. And, you know, he says something like, "That's no way to treat a lady." Like, it is hilarious coming from Rebus, who is just this awful, awful character who in season one, you know, he's so good at it, but so bad.
I think anybody named Rebus would probably turn out to be a bad guy.
Right? Exactly.
I'm sorry to any listeners named Rebus.
Sorry, Rebus out there. We're going to get all the listener complaints from the Rebus Guild of America. So, but anyway, they end up escaping. I should say they get away for a second, but Rebus mows them all down. But the Confederados come, and they're like, "What are you doing? Those are our people." They were getting ready to sell them to these Confederados. And Rebus says, "No, I can't let you do that." And he shoots all the Confederados except for a couple who have gone to go get the others that escaped. And so meanwhile, when Bernard and Charlotte are walking away with Abernathy, he just keeps saying over and over again, "I need to get to the train. I need to get to the train." So clearly something has happened between season one and season two, because we've seen Abernathy in two roles. We've seen him as the professor, which was one of his original roles that he reverted to. And then, of course, we've seen him as the rancher's father, the Abernathy role. So this is interesting. He's on a new loop. He's on a new story, which is just him getting to the train. So the Confederados come over. Charlotte ends up escaping. They're shooting at her, but she gets on a horse, rides away. The stormtroopers can't get her. You know, they're shooting everywhere around there. And Bernard and Peter are captured by the Confederados. So we're going to go now over to Fort Forlorn Hope. This is the Confederado fort that we saw at the end of, I believe it was just episode two, wasn't it, where we were trying to find out, we were left as to who is the colonel going to be. And this is where Dolores and the major are after she convinced, after that whole Last Supper scene, and she got the major and his guys to join her army. She showed up at this fort, and they get this huge welcome. It's like the 21-gun salute or whatever you want to call it. The doors open, and here he is, the colonel, Colonel Brigham. The actor's name is Frederick Len. It was one of those things where I was waiting for like the El Lazo reveal, like Lawrence being El Lazo in this timeline or being a different character. I thought, who is the Colonel going to be? It would have been cool just if we had known someone else and they were programmed on something. But either way, this guy seems great. So nothing wrong with that. But we get this new character. And he welcomes them and he says, who are you, to Dolores? And she says, just call me Wyatt. And instantly he knows that name. So as we know, Ford uploaded this narrative to Dolores, but also all the other people, you know, that are around after that update, they know of the name Wyatt. They have the recollection of Wyatt killing all his men. And I believe they were a part of the Union, right? So like when that was all happening in the flashbacks, they, I believe, were in blue uniforms. So the Confederates know who this Wyatt is. And so he kind of looks at her and doesn't expect her to be female, but he says, you're Wyatt. And Dolores ends up convincing the colonel to give her all of his men. And the way she does that is she ends up taking one of the one of their hostages that they've taken. And we see Clementine again dragging a hostage behind her with no effort. And she ends up saying, my soldiers are loyal. And she hands him one of those red SMG weapons that all of the QA people, the security for Westworld, are handling. So they manage to take one, and she gives it to him. And she says, see if you can get him before he escapes. So they let him run, and he doesn't get hardly a few footsteps, and the colonel mows this guy down with his machine gun. And they're all looking at it like, oh, my God, what is this thing? So the deal that she strikes with him is, she says, we've got people coming and they're going to come attack us all. The only way that we can beat them is with the numbers that you have. And if you want more weapons like this, you can keep them all. She doesn't care. She says, you can have them. Just help us out here. And so he agrees to that. And, he wants to get their weapons for his army. So they team up. And Teddy ends up, as they're walking through the fort, looking at all these Confederados that are just like we've seen them in the past. They're drinking and they're just acting like idiots. And, they're not nice people. Teddy says, these men are animals. And Dolores says, these men are just children. We don't stand a chance if we're fighting alone. Trust me. And so at this point in time, we know she has a plan. And we're going to see what happens a little bit later on with these Confederados.
Yeah. And I love that scene too. I can't wait to get to it.
Yeah. I will say, even though I'm not a huge fan of Dolores this season because of her programming and because of all the human killing, I like Dolores in this episode more than any others. I started to really...
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, I like the character. I like the way she was written. Again, she wasn't doing as much human killing. You could actually sympathize with her a bit. She was being a little bit nicer. And of course, we're going to see a little bit of the Dolores come through that we're used to.
And that's a good segue into the episode title, actually, with the
is it okay
to E Fortune or Fortuna,
okay,
which is basically like a Machiavellian theory of what it's like to be a leader.
Okay,
so it obviously revolves around Dolores, but it says virtu is the ability to be ruthless when necessary, but also to be good when the situation arises. A leader with virtu has the ability to make whatever decision is needed to keep the country stable and to advance their goals. And I got this all from comicbook.com. They did a little synopsis of what the episode title might be. But and then the Fortuna part is means the things that the good leader can't control. So how it applies to Dolores is her being capable of seeing both great beauty and great destruction in the world. And while many see Dolores' actions as ruthless, she certainly believes that her actions are necessary for the protection of the other hosts and from the humans who have abused them for years.
Okay, awesome.
I found that an interesting read because I had no idea. I don't think you did either, knowing what the title meant when the episode came up. So I looked that up and thought that seems pretty interesting. It puts a little more knowledge, I guess, into Dolores's character or Dolores / Wyatt in being a leader.
Awesome. Yeah, great find on that one. So yeah, it does seem to really personify what Dolores is going through. So we're going to see how she evolves as a leader later on in this episode. And I have no idea where it's going to take us after this because there's a couple twists coming.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll just have to see. But we go to the group that I like to call the Three Amigos. It's Maeve, it's Hector, and it's Lee. These three crack me up. And absolutely love. The first shot of them that we get is just similar to where we saw Lee in the first episode holding the donkey. We go to them walking down this creek, and Lee's there in his outfit. It's so funny that Maeve and Hector have, like, you know, Maeve has a nicer outfit on. Hector has his black leather thing on that looks really cool. And they dress up Lee like a stable boy. It's so funny.
You can't help but laugh every time you see him.
Yeah, he looks like such a yokel. And here he is, management and the writer of these narratives. And here he,
right.
And he looks like some stable boy. So you go to him, and he's walking along the creek here. And Lee says, we need to get back underground. And Maeve and Hector are like, nope, we're going to keep going. And they say, you're the one that told us this is the quickest route. But he knows the dangers that lie for them, I think, not only because of QA and all the Delos security that are coming after them. And he even says to Maeve, they're hunting for hosts. That's you. But he also knows the other dangers out in the wild. And so as soon as he says that, they're crossing the creek, and there's Ghost Nation. There's three of these, at least three at first. And I think they're surrounded by more of these Native American warriors that are called Ghost Nation. And Maeve starts getting the flashbacks. If you remember in season one, when she sees her memories of her and her daughter on the farm, there are the Ghost Nation warriors outside of the window coming to kill her. And that was one of the coolest transitions, I think, in season one, because the Ghost Nation warrior opens the door and then it's Man in Black there. So it was a really cool scene. But anyway, so she's getting all these flashbacks and she's terrified because she's trying to get her daughter to safety, and here are these guys who have killed them in the past out there walking around. So she's really unsettled by this, and the Ghost Nation leader talks to Hector. He speaks their language, and what they end up saying is, you two can continue on this path, but he stays with us. And that's Lee that they're pointing to, and I think that this is a really big clue into what we're getting into. So
I know what you're going to get into.
Okay, so this is interesting. Yeah. The last time that we saw Stubbs before season two was getting abducted by Ghost Nation. Now, all of a sudden, Stubbs is walking around trying to help everybody and do his job. Well, that's weird. They never explained it. I wonder why. At the end of last season, Elsie disappeared, and it looked like she was getting killed by Bernard. That was our guess. I think she says you and or something, and you know, we don't know who it is, but we're like, okay, he did the same thing to Teresa. Why wouldn't it be Bernard? My theory is that Elsie has reprogrammed Ghost Nation to save all the humans at the park, because why else? Why would Ghost Nation let, I mean, they have no, it's not like they're in charge like Maeve. Maeve knows that she's a host, but she has a goal. She can read other hosts. She can say, hey, you do your thing. Don't get in my way, but you go do that. You know, she's not killing for the fun of it like the other hosts are, but Ghost Nation, if they're just these warriors out there, why wouldn't they kill or fight with Hector and Maeve? It makes no sense that they would say, oh yeah, you guys go do your mission and we just want this human to kill. I don't think so. I think that's what they want you to think. And I think Elsie has programmed them all, because I don't know if you noticed this, it seemed like a total homage to the Jedi mind trick that Obi-Wan tries to do.
Maeve, I definitely see that there.
Yeah, she kind of waves her hand. And she's just like, these are not the droids you're looking for. She's like, like, will not bother him anymore. Something like that to him. It was really funny little gesture there that I'm sure all the Star Wars fans picked up on.
I like that you threw Elsie in there as the programmer for those Ghost Nation, or like, or reprogramming the Ghost Nation thing, because that is a theory that's floating around right now, is that they are protecting the humans, which is also why I think when you texted me last night about Grace at the end of the episode pulling up or swimming up and Ghost Nation picking her up, like, I don't think she's as doomed as you think she is if she actually is human.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's not coincidence that they wanted Lee, and then they were interested in Grace. It's like,
exactly. And the fact that Maeve can't control them is a telling feature as well. It's like, if Elsie was smart enough to circumvent, you know, somebody from reprogramming them again, you know,
it would be Elsie for sure.
Yeah, I'm waiting for that Elsie comeback so badly.
Yeah, it's not that Stubbs doesn't have any skills. I mean, he uses a tablet. He does text. I mean, he handles the security for the park. But Stubbs is not on the level as Elsie. Elsie worked with Bernard, who's in charge of all that. And so she knows programming. She's the one that resets the hosts. She works on them when they're getting repairs, getting upgrades. She was Bernard's right-hand man, so to speak.
Right.
So if someone's going to program them, it's her. And we know, again, spoilers, but that's what we do. At the end of last season, if you went to their their website, again, there was like this little Easter egg of a distress signal, and it was Elsie. So if you were just watching season one, you wouldn't know she's alive. But if you go to the website and you saw that, which I don't know where it is now, I'm sure someone uploaded it to YouTube, but she's like in this little, I think it's like a black and white, really low quality thing, but it's her. And she's trying to send for help. So that's my theory. Tell us if you agree or disagree. I would love to hear from the listeners and the other fans to see if they're on board with that. But Maeve ends up telling Hector, she's like, I need Lee. I need him. So you can't let them take him. And he starts shooting at the ground and he's trying to reason with them, but they just keep approaching and more start showing up. And so Hector eventually, he doesn't want to kill them, but he just turns tail and runs. He knows he can't take them all. So they try to escape, and eventually they're going to go to an underground tunnel, one of those elevators that's we talked about, one of those like lift the rock and you know, right, press the button and an elevator comes out of the ground. So we'll get to that in a second. But back at the fort, the Confederados have Bernard, they have Peter Abernathy, and they have a few of the other people that they've captured. And one of the Confederados is being a jerk. Peter Abernathy's currently in his professor talk, and he's talking about God, this and that. And the guy ends up punching him, but Dolores sees him in the distance and she walks up and says, hey, don't do that. You know, let me have him. And the Confederados like, what? You get out of here. And Teddy ends up going and knocking the guy, not knocking him out, but knocking him to the ground, punches him. And he says, you know, if you don't want any more of that, you're going to do what she says. And so the guy goes and unties Abernathy, and says, I'm going to take him to the infirmary. When they get there, Dolores starts, you know, she sees him and she can't believe she's found her father from that storyline. And Teddy is like, who is it? And the thing is, if you remember from last season, Teddy, once Dolores's father, and I think the first episode was reset, he was programmed to, you know, or decommissioned to go to cold storage. And the old bartender from the saloon was playing the part of Dolores's father. So since Teddy was on that loop and he's programmed and didn't have the awakening Dolores did, he still thinks that Dolores's father looks like the bartender. He would not know this was him. So Dolores says, that's my father. You don't remember? And she ends up saying, you know, Teddy, you're all I have left now. And they have a really nice moment.
Right.
But when she ends up going to talk to him, he is very out of it. You know, it's like he's having cold sweats in bed. He's mumbling. He's saying gibberish. I think he mentions, I've got to get to the train. And he's all sorts of confused.
He is so good in this episode.
Yeah. The actor, Lewis Hertham, is amazing. I said that and was tweeting at him in season one, you know, the first episode when I saw him, he is fantastic.
Yes. I loved him in this episode.
Yeah. He does the thing that I thought was so great about Dolores, and she does a little bit of it here too, but he has to do the thing where he has to switch, you know, on a dime, he has to change into a different character, and he is doing it erratically. It's not even like, It's not even like Dolores being interrogated by Bernard or Arnold and saying, you know, freeze all motor functions and she stops. This is Peter Abernathy getting so confused. He has three different characters that he's cycling erratically through. And he stops on a dime and he starts doing his professor thing. And then he gets worried and he says, I got to get to the train. And then when he sees Dolores, he recognizes her. And it's such a touching moment because
it's incredible.
We haven't seen this since the beginning of season one. And here we are, three episodes into season two. And we get not only Peter Abernathy, the rancher's father, but we get the rancher's daughter, Dolores, shining through.
Yeah, I was blown away by it. Just the moment that Bernard started looking at him and Dolores reuniting with him, just blown away.
I missed him a lot. Again, incredible actor, Lewis Hertham. He was so good. And I really missed that character. And they put him away in cold storage. Bernard whispered something to him and they put him away. And, you know, I just didn't know if we'd ever see him again until this season when they were tracking him down. So that was a great reunion, but, not for him. He's pretty out of sorts. But they get this nice little moment where Abernathy does remember his daughter. And the great thing that we saw was Dolores, she puts the accent back on, meaning it's not a choice by her. It shows you that the Wyatt storyline has not completely taken over. We know that Dolores has old memories. And whatever was triggered here by her father was able to actually get that loop, get that storyline back out. And she's talking to him like she does at the beginning of season one. So that was another reason why I'm like, okay, Dolores is still in there. I like that Dolores.
Yep.
So I really hope that this reunion and whatever is to come, hopefully she's going to evolve. I don't want her to be the big bad where it's like, you know, by the end of the season, we have to kill Dolores. I would like her to somehow revert back to the character that we liked.
I think in a lot of ways, she's kind of the face of the show, isn't she? Like, it would be weird to have her be completely eliminated.
Oh, well, I mean, eliminated in Westworld standards is all I mean. She very well could. It's not, I mean, Anthony Hopkins, not the face of the show, but a big actor, you know, they take care of him. Very well could take care of Dolores at the end of season two. But all I mean is I would hate to hate her the whole season, if that is more clear. I don't want to. I want to like Dolores.
Yeah.
So she's definitely getting there, but Abernathy's having his episode here, and she says, I'm going to go get help. So we know that she's going to go find Bernard. Bernard's the only one that can fix him. That was his job, and he is at the fort right now. So we're going to bounce back over to the Three Amigos underground, and they're all navigating the passageway. And this is another really funny interaction between Lee and the other two. I completely agree with Linnea when she says that Lee is such an ass, but it's hard not to like
him.
You know, I talked last week. It's funny, the parallel between Logan, and Logan's an ass and he's funny, but yet I don't feel as sorry for him. Lee to me doesn't seem like as bad of a guy. He's just kind of an ass. Like, that's his personality. He's a smug guy. I don't think he's a dangerous or a mean or vindictive guy. Like, Logan definitely can be a not nice person, but, Lee's just kind of a D-bag, and you know, he's a bro, if for lack of a better word. And you know, it's he's a cool guy that's going to, you know, he thinks he's hot stuff for writing all these narratives, and he's constantly getting shut down. He is shut down here again by Maeve and Hector, which is always great. But he sees Maeve and Hector, like, in this romantic light, and they start holding hands. And Lee, he just cannot help himself. If I were him, I would not want to piss these people off.
Not at
who
all.
Have spared him. But Lee jumps in front of him and says, hold on, whoa, whoa, whoa. And he like does like a slang freeze all motor functions, even though he can't freeze them. But he's like, freeze up here or something. He's like, you two are not supposed to be together. He's talking about Hector, how he, you know, and we learn, obviously, Lee programmed Hector. So he's like, no, you're supposed to be in love with Isabella and she's your true love. And this is not, this shouldn't happen. Like, sure, you guys have flirtations, but you have a love interest and Hector starts talking and saying these really romantic lines, and all of a sudden Lee interjects. He says, you don't know me, and then talks about Isabella, and then Lee jumps in and he starts, you know,
citing the lines that he wrote for him
line for line. Yeah. And then he goes, maybe I know you better than you think. And Hector is just like blown away, because he's having that same the same moment that Maeve had at the end of season two, when Felix showed her that she was saying rehearsed lines that she thought were her own. Hector said, when I awoke in the fire, you know, when I awoke where you guys work on us, I realized that wasn't real, but this thing between me and Maeve is real. And he goes on and thinks he's describing it in his own words, but no, he's doing it still with Lee's programming, his dialogue. And, Hector goes ahead. Maeve looks at him and kind of is like, yeah, whatever. Just go ahead. Like, ignore him. And the two of them talk, and Maeve asks him where this love interest came from. Where did he program this dialogue? And we learn, and we get more of an emotional, more of a down-to-earth Lee without his smug guard up. And he says that this was a woman that left him.
Yep.
And Maeve kind of psychoanalyzes him here and says, so you wrote a man that you could never be. You wrote a real man to say these lines and be the man that you want to be.
Yeah.
And then she ends up saying, that's even more sad than I thought. So poor Lee.
She had a funny line after that too about, you know what, so is handholding.
Yeah, right. It's it's ridiculous, but so is handholding.
She's keeping him on a short leash though. Like, he,
oh my gosh.
I do feel bad for Lee.
Right. Him. I don't know why. He is a jerk. He was such a jerk. Peeing on the map and being an a-hole the whole first season. But they've got him so, like, I mean, they've got him dressed up as the stable boy, and they're just like, she's basically telling him that he's sad and pathetic and his life story is sad. And like, it's just like, God, this guy, poor guy. But anyway, so, you know, nice little interaction with the amigos here. We jump back and forth. It's the storyline. There's three, we should just say this now. They're basically, I think, three different stories going on. There's, of course, this one where Maeve is trying to find her daughter. There's the Bernard trying to stay alive and in the past trying to hunt down Peter Abernathy and help Charlotte out. And then the third storyline would be the Delos and the security trying to hunt down all the hosts and get the park back together. So those are like the three kind of present storylines going on outside of the William Pass stuff, outside of the new Raj World stuff that we get a glimpse of with this new Grace character. But we go back, we go between these three. And really this episode, it's the fort and it's Hector and Maeve. So we're bouncing back to the fort. Angela goes and gets Bernard and brings him into Abernathy. He sees him. And then Dolores walks up and she says, you know, can you help him or will you help him? And this is another vulnerable moment for Dolores, one that we haven't seen this season. And she says, I'm not telling you to, I'm asking you to. So she's actually being nice about it. And I think this is because that connection with her father, she sees this is the rancher's daughter seeing her father dying and would do anything to save his life.
Yeah.
So really, really nice to kind of see that come back. And she looks at Bernard and she's questioning, you know, what he knows and what memories he has of Arnold. And she says, you don't know who you are, do you? The man you're based on. I wonder if there's any of him in you. And she ends up going on this diatribe after Bernard says, I was programmed to be a character and do what they told me to do. She's like, no, I was, you know, I was doing that for a while. But now she says, quote, now I feel like I've discovered my own voice. And I wonder if that's foreshadowing just because of my other theory that Dolores is still on a narrative. She thinks she has free will, but she says, quote, now I feel like I've discovered my own voice. So I think that may be a little subtle foreshadowing of like, yeah, she feels like she has. I don't think she has. But she realizes that also Bernard's never been outside the park because Bernard says we're just a speck of dust on this much larger, you know, world out here. And she says, you've never been outside, have you? She says, I have. I've been out there. And she tells him the world is marked by survival, by a kind that refuses to die. She says, quote, here we are, a kind that will never know death. And we're fighting, yet we're fighting to live. There is beauty in what we do. Shouldn't we too to try to survive? So again, this is just really great writing. I think that's another reason why I like this episode, because we had a lot of monologues and a lot of great performances where these actors got the chance to really deliver some cool lines.
Yeah, that last line was actually the subtitle for the episode. I was reading it when it popped up on HBO Now. It's like, oh, that's kind of a nice line. I wonder when that's going to be said. And of course, it was Dolores saying it to Bernard there.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I definitely clung to it when I heard it. I'm like, that's a line right there. That's good. So back in the tunnels, Lee is like, hold on. You know, some of us actually need to rest. We're not robots, paraphrasing there. But all of a sudden, they hear these screams, these yells, like coming from around the corner. And at first, I'm like, who is this? I thought it was maybe the Q&A team had already started attacking the host. But this guy runs past them like something you'd see out of a stunt show or something. He is just set completely on fire running past them. And this is the line. What's the line that Hector says here?
She has a dragon.
Oh, it's so good. It's just like an understated, just very, you know, just a very calm delivery. You know, he's surprised, but Hector isn't like, you know, really playing it up.
Right.
She has a dragon, seriously saying that, which is such a great little homage once again to Game of Thrones.
Which we won't be, it'll probably be the only dragon we see this year, unfortunately.
Right. Unfortunately. But I do love that Hector, you know, he knows very little of the world of man, of modern man and their modern weapons. So the fact that someone is setting other people on fire, you know, first thing he thinks of is that it's a dragon doing it. So great line there. But we see Armistice. She is holding this flamethrower. We last saw her at the season one finale. If you remember, her arm was stuck in the door as Hector and Maeve got away. She was holding them off. So we find out that she was able to take them all out, and she has a new arm. Obviously, she's holding this gun with two hands. And we find out a little bit later that she got that from Felix, Linnea's favorite characters, and Sylvester, who... Sylvester's another one who's a creep. You know, he's a total terrible character from the first season.
But he's a good counter. He's a good counter to Felix, though. It's like
he is
that Felix is to the weirdo that Sylvester is.
Yeah, but you still, again, you feel sorry for him. Like, you feel sorry for Lee. Like, he's a creepo. He's like, you know, people are like paying him to have sex with the host while they're getting repaired during lunch breaks. Yeah. Like, he is not he's kind of a scuzzy person. But then again, you're just like, he's just a dude, and he's in this crazy situation. So
yeah, and in all reality, like in the first season, he was trying to, aside from his scam that you just mentioned with the sex, but like he was trying to do his job and just keep them out of trouble and
keep hosts from murdering everyone.
Exactly. You know, so like he's in the situation that he tried to stay out of, but like by doing the right thing. But, you know, of course, Felix was coerced into doing what he's doing by Maeve. So, I mean, they're just in a really crummy situation.
It is a terrible situation. And talk about terrible situations. What about this situation that Armistice put Sylvester in? She's got Felix tied up, and then Sylvester, I guess he's tied up too, but he has a grenade unpinned with the handle closed under his chin. So he has no way, his hands are tied. He has no way to, you know, if he drops this grenade, they're both going to explode. So as soon, the first time when you see him and Maeve is untying Felix, you hear him mumbling something to the side, and then you hear him go, grenade, and Armistice walks over and just like very slowly bends down, looks at him. She pulls the grenade out from under his chin, and she puts a pin in slowly to stop the handle from, you know, going up and setting it off. It was such a great scene. She's got him whipped like Maeve has Lee whipped, you know? It's so funny.
It was something I was so curious about that I kind of nerded out a little bit, and I just kind of, you know, flexed my neck to like, what would it be like to have to hold that grenade there, and how long could you hold it? And realistically,
horrible.
Yeah, like, I hope it wasn't very long, because there's no way that he could hold that in for a lengthy amount of time, because it was just uncomfortable doing it. It sounds like you're doing it yourself right now.
It's just making me, throat is like kind of tensing up, because I'm thinking, oh, to hold an item down like that and your muscles to contract.
Exactly. What a diabolical way to keep him in check, you know?
But you know what? For a kind of a scumbag like him, it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, you can do that to him. I wouldn't want to see that happen to Felix, but Sylvester is getting spared. He's alive. He's able to live, but he's going to get a little mistreated like Lee is. So he's going to be our comic relief. So back at the fort, we've got Bernard plugging in USB 4.0, I think, super high speed. He's trying to navigate through the tablet and see what's going on in Abernathy's head. And he says he's wildly unstable, mainly just bouncing between old roles. Somebody jury-rigged a thin character and programmed it into him. It seems as though it's masking a vastly bigger file, and he says that it has an immensely complex encryption key. So we talked about this, about the package from episode one.
Yep.
We know that Charlotte desperately wants to, I think Teresa was helping her too, but Charlotte desperately wants to get this package out of Westworld. It's supposed to go to the mainland. And we know that Abernathy, whatever he's smuggling is very valuable data. Now, I have a theory on this. I don't know. I thought of it after we watched the last episode. I don't know if it was by the time, because it was the next day that we discussed episode two. But I think that it is Daddy Delos's consciousness that has been transplanted into Abernathy. Did I mention that at all?
Oh, we've talked about the transfer of consciousness and Daddy Delos being one of them. What was his name? Jim?
Jim Delos.
Daddy Delos is so much more fun.
Just, I feel it's like I feel a little dirty saying it, but also it just sounds so right. Like, I don't usually call anyone Daddy anything, but
nope, not.
But Daddy Delos. I mean, that's just
it's
alliteration. Yeah. It does. So anyway, I don't know. I think I mentioned it last episode, but I really, really think with this episode and how much security it has, I really think that what we saw in season two at the retirement / promotion party that the Deloses had, or I should say Delos / William, I really feel that the dad's, he was coughing, he seemed to be sick. So if you missed that, I think that his sickness was making him retire early. William takes over the company, but they do allude to something happening in time, or that Delos will be able to see whatever they're working on. And my theory is that he wants to transplant his consciousness before he dies into one of these hosts so that he can keep living.
Yeah.
Just like we've seen this in stories over and over again about people wanting to become immortal. or someone's sick, so we transplant their body. I mean, you know, it's happened a lot in different stories, but I think that's what they're alluding to. We don't get any answer this episode, but we know that it's very complex. We know that Delos, Charlotte, is very high up in the Delos company. We know that she desperately wants to get this information to the mainland. So to me, I kind of think like it's this very valuable VIP type person, you know, Jim Delos himself, or at least his consciousness. But we don't know. And it's a bummer because this episode, I was so hoping that once Bernard cracked it, that we would get some little clue that we could pick apart. But I don't know. You didn't see any little clues that would swing either way or confirm either way, did you?
I don't think so, no. But I am on board with your theory, since we have discussed it at least twice now doing these podcasts, that the consciousness thing, the data collect, or the DNA collection, and the behind the scenes data collection of what all these people are doing, it's going to play into something huge like that. So I mean, it's completely on the table of a possibility.
Now, a couple of other theories about who it could be. So we know this is important data. So obviously we mentioned even from episode one that this could be the intellectual property of the park. It could be how all the hosts operate, their code. He says it's a very large file. So this thin character of get me to the train guy is actually covering up this very large encrypted file. So is the file all their IP? Number two, is it Ford? Ford is the one that created these machines. Is it Ford's consciousness? Wouldn't they want to get, you know, Ford is dead now. Wouldn't they want to get the mastermind's consciousness to unlock all his secrets and stuff that they don't even know about? So it could be Ford or possibly Delos. Those are kind of the ones that I'm bouncing.
Ford's, though, I would think is more likely is in the overall coding, though, right? Since he's been able to communicate with William through, or the man in black, William, through different hosts here and there.
Well, certainly he's able to tap into people. We didn't see it this episode, but two different people in the first two episodes. I agree with that. I just am thinking that maybe they were able to capture it somehow. I don't know. And then the other one, I mean, it could be, to throw a curveball, it could be Ford slash Arnold. Maybe somehow Arnold was working on that, since he would have, of course, creating the hosts and everything. Maybe that was part of Arnold's research, sure. And he was able to somehow capture his consciousness. That would be how he was able to talk to Dolores and still do things after his death. Maybe it's him. And since Bernard, I feel like Ford was kind of maybe the idea man or the pitch man, you know, that business partner, where Arnold was really the tech guy, the guy that invented all the host technology. So it could have something to do with Arnold.
Yeah.
But we're going to have to wait and find out. We go back to the Bernard and Abernathy, though. He is trying to crack the code on this thing. And on the tablet, we see a couple little things on the screen that I zoomed into. It says the host is passenger. So there's the professor. There's Peter Abernathy, the rancher's father. And now this one's called passenger. It says his main objective is to get to the mainland. So we know that this host is programmed to do nothing else but say, I got to get to my train and get me to the mainland. So very, very limited functionality when he's in this storyline. Abernathy then turns into the professor type character, more of a menacing character that says, what is the use of a violent kind of delightfulness if there is no pleasure in? And then he gets cut off. But I thought that was kind of cool. I really wanted to know what he was going to say, because we know that Abernathy was one of the first hosts we've seen affected with this, you know, violent delights come violent ends thing. And it was really great to hear him kind of spin that into a different line. I liked that. Do you have any idea? Just quick. Do you have any idea what he was going to say?
No, not at all.
Okay. No big deal. So he gets cut off, and then Bernard is able to hack in. It says one time encryption key. Do you want to use it? He clicks yes. And then of course, before I get there, I will say this was interesting. The tablet shows a symbol that we've never seen before this episode, but we have seen it earlier on in this episode, something that looks very similar. It is the best way that I can compare it is it looks kind of like a Venn diagram. So it's not completely circular. It's almost like two Ds, or like a forward D and then a backwards D that's overlapping it to create that kind of Venn diagram look. But in the very first segment that we got before the intro, Grace looked at her journal, and she had written in it a bunch of different little notes. And then she drew this symbol by hand. And what it was that Venn diagram look with the middle shaded in. and then there was an arrow pointing to the left, and it had the N for north symbol by it. So whatever it is, there's an arrow pointing north, and then it had that symbol. And so this tablet flashed that real quick, and it was once he was unlocked. So I'm thinking the symbol, because of it kind of looks like a D, Delos Destinations maybe. Maybe it's something to do with a Delos-type symbol, but I wonder why on earth Grace had this symbol. The Grace, who we think is a guest, what does that have to do with Raj World or what's up north? This is just a big question mark here, is what that even means.
Yeah, I haven't the slightest clue, but that was interesting to see that in two different timelines, considering that, you know, going back to your Teresa theory, like I'm banking on that being a young Teresa. So, I mean, it's a lot to process.
That's the question. Is it a timeline? Now, we say timeline, you have to be careful because like William, Man in Black are two different timelines, right? So I don't know. We don't know if this is a storyline or a timeline difference right now. From the tiger washing up, we knew that it chased Grace, and then 11 days later, they found this tiger. You would presume in the same spot, it's the same tiger. That would mean not a big time jump. So I'm not really sure what to take of that. It would not be beyond them. As we know, the first season was almost entirely about a head fake of time jumps. So very, very well could be. But at this point, I'm just thinking that it's, you know, simultaneously concurrently happening at least 11 days within each other. Grace is leaving Raj World, and the tiger and her are washing up in West World. So we're going to have to wait to find out. But the very last thing that we get about this Abernathy Bernard scene, it's, of course, the camera's looking at him. They don't show us what's on this damn tablet. They showed us all these crazy screens of gibberish tech code. And then they only focus on him once he unlocks it. And he goes, my God. And then it cut to the next scene. I'm like, damn it. I really wanted to know. Like, come on. You can't just give this to us to end on. But we'll have to wait. So Bernard knows who this guy is or what this is that he's hiding. So we go now to the epic battle. So this is what we've been waiting for. We know that the QA team and all the Delos security and all their cars and, you know, SMGs are going to attack the fortress. Charlotte interacted with them earlier when she runs into the QA team, and she says, "Are you going to go to the fort?" And they say, "Yes, that's our first stop." So we know they're heading that way, and we've been waiting for these two sides to clash. So we get this awesome scene. It's like at least a 10-minute sequence of this battle. The QA, the only question I had about the QA here, and I don't know if you noticed this, but if you're going to attack an entire fort full of Confederados with cannons and guns, and you know they have barriers and things to hide behind, I feel like you would bring some kind of either machine gun, a rocket launcher, some kind of bomb to drop on them. I mean, did you feel like they were a little ill-equipped?
Yeah, I mean, you got that. The Confederados got a moment of worry when they saw the cars come around the corner, but then they didn't really pack anything else with them besides those guns that they already knew they had. So, I mean, you would think they'd have more.
It just seemed a little bit like swarms.
But, yeah, it was I didn't really consider it at the time, but now that you mention it, it did seem like they weren't as prepared as they should have been, knowing what's in the park and what, you know, the numbers that they had.
Yeah. These are like special forces. These are like security these are the Delos team that their sole job is to, if something crazy happens in the park, they need to lock it down. And so I found it really odd that they brought a few cars and these SMGs to attack. You know, all these guys are lined up, all these QA guys with their red SMGs. And yeah, they're taking out Confederados, sure, but they're way outnumbered still. And again, I just feel like they would, they can't shut them down remotely, but they could shut them down with a big, you know, I don't want to say a nuke, but I mean, they could launch a mortar at them. They could, even the Union soldiers, I think, or maybe it was the Confederados last season had the big turret machine guns, right? Big Gatling guns. So I don't know. It was a little weird to me that they weren't prepared, but I don't know. It made for an epic battle, but come on guys, get your stuff together. I want next time that Carl comes back and he's bringing his team, I want him to start launching some heavy ammunition at these guys. But in the whole battle thing, the QA is able to abduct Abernathy. Bernard ends up going and hiding in the corner of the room when they come in and get him. But at this point, we notice a big change in Bernard. Bernard is shaking. He's doing what I thought looked like when he got knocked in the head in episode 1, but I don't think it was so much that there was any fluid leaking from his ear or anything. I took it as that maybe Bernard plugged in to Peter Abernathy. And I wonder if Bernard assumed the information that Abernathy was carrying.
That makes a lot of sense, too, especially with the side-eye theory that you have with Charlotte at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. I think that there's more to it because Bernard really starts glitching, and we have not seen Bernard glitch since episode one when he needs that cerebellic fluid.
He was always shaky throughout the episode, but not to the level that he's shaky at this point.
No, his hand does a little twitch, but it really, I mean, he's using the tablet, and I looked at his hand and it was pretty still when he was holding the tablet. But as soon as he says, "Oh my God," and he gets this information or unlocks it, all of a sudden the next scene, he's twitching out, he's in the corner. And then later on, not too long from here, we see him running and trying to escape this big battle. And he is like falling over himself and his whole body is shaking, almost like a seizure. So anyway, theory there, but I'm thinking that I think that Bernard actually was able to extract the info. So we'll see what comes of that. But yeah, that also might mean, Charlotte's still looking for Abernathy. So I don't know that she presumes that whatever Abernathy had is gone, but yeah, maybe she does know.
The scene at the beginning, which again, I didn't the way that you did. It makes sense. You know, like we see her walk away with Abernathy this time. It was really cool seeing Charlotte get geared up and get a crew to go in there and extract him.
Charlotte's awesome. I mean, this actor, this is Tessa Thompson. She's awesome. She was awesome last season, but I mean, Ragnarok, the last film we saw her in was Thor Ragnarok as Valkyrie. She is so badass. I love this actor. I think she's phenomenal. And whenever she runs into QA, in between the 11 days ago and the current timeline, she runs into them in the tunnel and they scan her and they make sure she's human. But the head QA guy of this team ends up saying, "Hey, we're supposed to get you and bring you back in or, you know, to safety." And she's like, "Yeah, no, where are you heading?" And she straps up, she gets a gun, she gets a vest. She says, "I'm going to need those that he's wearing." And she goes right to this battle.
She alludes at the beginning he keeps slipping away, like you said. And then we see her take off with him this time, but evidently he doesn't have what she needs or what she's expecting, or in the next few episodes, we'll probably see him get taken away. We know that, as you'll touch on here in a second, that Dolores is going to go after him. So,
yeah, absolutely. So she ends up seeing when all this battle is happening, she sees from atop the fortress that the two guys from Delos are carrying away her father. And so she runs after them. He looks like he's kind of knocked out. He's not struggling or anything, but they've got him. They're going to try to get him to the mainland. So she gets down from the barrier and she has her men lock the gates behind the Confederados. This was a big, this was kind of a big surprise because until this point, it looked like Dolores was being pretty fair. She was, you know, she was getting her way, but she was also promising things. And I didn't think she had an ulterior motive, but it ended up that she just wanted these guys for a distraction. She and her men actually from behind the barricade start shooting all the Confederados that are trying to pound on the door and say, "Let us in." She shoots them to create this barricade, which just gives them long enough for the Delos team to not be able to get through. And she has Angela shoot the buried TNT that the Colonel had his men bury along the whole field that they're battling. And it blows everybody up and they're all dead. So crazy, crazy scene there. So Dolores and her army, you know, Wyatt's men get away. Teddy gets away. And we're going to touch on that in a second, but no Confederados. So they're toast. Meanwhile, Bernard, like we said, is glitching. We see Clementine come and he's like, he seems like he's relieved to see her. And it's like, "Clementine," and she ends up knocking him out and takes him, you know, with her. Afterwards we see this is a really, I feel bad for Teddy. I felt bad for Teddy all season, but I'm really worried for him now. He's been Dolores's lapdog. He's her gopher and her yes man. And she does everything he says, follows around like a puppy dog. But Dolores is talking to the major of the Confederados. And, he basically says, "You're a traitor. You've killed us all. You're a traitor." And she says to Teddy, go take him out back with all the other dogs and put him down. And, in that scene, when later on, when the major's talking to Teddy, he says, "I've been watching you. We ain't so different." You and I are both trigger men to tyrants, yep. except me. I know what I want. And you know, he basically insults Dolores and insults Teddy and says that, you know, at least I, you know, I take orders, but I'm a real person and I have know what I want. And at this point, Teddy puts a gun up and it looks like he's going to shoot him. But Teddy repeats what Dolores told him earlier. And he said, well, he says, we ain't nothing alike. Yep. And then he says, you're just a child. Get out of here. And he lets him go. And meanwhile, we see Dolores watching from around the corner, so to speak. I am really worried because we know that 11 days from the massacre, Teddy's face down yeah. in the water with those hundreds of other hosts. And we see Dolores being very disappointed and walking away when she sees him betray her, so to speak, by letting this guy go. What is going to happen to Teddy between now and then? I really feel like we're going to get a Dolores turning on Teddy, you know, losing her faith in him. And yeah, I wonder if she's the one might that puts
it's,
him there.
It's a weird, I mentioned in both other episodes that like, I feel bad for Teddy because he, you know, he's programmed to admire her and be, you know, in love with her. And, but like he sees Wyatt's, you know, actions coming out and can't do anything about it. And like, that's his rival, right? Like it's just
yeah
such a yeah
it's a very and yeah tough and
as we saw from
Teddy.
The first episode, or what we believe pretty much unanimously believed to be Teddy in the water, is you know, he's gonna have his coming shortly, and you know, but he's all for all intents and purposes yeah. the good guy. So
yeah, we don't, the thing is, the reason why I think that Dolores is going to have something to do with it is we don't see Dolores in the water. We see Teddy and we see hundreds of other hosts who I presume at this point, again, just a theory, but I presume they're part of Dolores's army that she's built along with Teddy. And what I kind of feel like is there's going to be some emotional beat here, some kind of intense scene where Dolores ends up throwing him to the wolves. And I think she's going to let him die for her, or, you know, there's going to be some interaction between to after this scene. And, you know, I don't want Teddy to die. And obviously we know what's going to happen, but I think it's going to be heartbreaking because Teddy does love Dolores. And Teddy is that character that, just like William loved Dolores, Teddy is that host that is in that role. And he would do anything for her. And I think that she's going to turn on him. And it's going to be heartbreaking. I don't want to see it, but I know it will be amazing when it happens. So we go back. This is the final segment before the episode ends. So I was watching the clock at this point. I don't know if you watched the clock during the show, but it's like, oh, how much time do we have left? Right. You know what's coming, and you just don't want it to end. But we see Grace washing up on shore. So these are the bookends of this episode. Grace washes up. We see big claw marks on her back. So obviously the tiger was able to swipe at her before they both fell into the water. But we see the feet of somebody. And at first I thought it was going to be Man in Black, but the camera yep. looks up and it is Ghost Nation. And so this is where, before I realized, I rewatched the episode, before I realized that they were coming for humans exclusively, I was like, oh man, she is screwed.
Right, because yeah, programmed.
Ghost Nation has been the bad guys, right? I mean,
yeah, terrifying.
I mean, that's, yeah. So, yeah. So I was like, oh geez. But now definitely upon second watch, I'm like, oh wow, they're going to save her. And I believe either the next episode or episode 5, we will see Ghost Nation bringing Grace to meet up with Elsie. We're going to get a big reunion. We're going to see what happens. So I can't wait.
Yeah, me either. I said it earlier. Like I feel cheated for so long without Elsie. I really want her back and see what she's been up to and what she's going to do to save everybody. Yeah. Yeah, she's great.
She's awesome. Her banter with Stubbs was so funny last season. They were great. So the last thing that we go and we see the landscape of Westworld, but we see an area we're not familiar with. So we find out that we're up north. We see mountains. We see snowfall. We've got our three amigos here that have joined up with some other guys. They've got Felix and Sylvester along with them. They're using, I think since they lost their donkey in the struggle, I think now Sylvester is their donkey. He's like carrying their rifles, I think, in a bag. So it's kind of funny. And, you know, he's complaining that it's cold out and, you know, doing the Sylvester stuff. But after all that, Lee says, we must be on the north edge of the park, the Klondike narrative. 3 or 4 sectors east of the homesteads. And so that tells me that the homesteads, I believe, is where Maeve is trying to get to, where she's going to locate her daughter. And so whatever sectors, however big they are, they're 3 or 4 sectors away from their destination. And they go to a campsite and they are hoping to find some friendlies there. And I think it is Lee, right, that digs in the snow and he ends up pulling a head out of the snow. And it's like a ninja looking type of head, someone with like a face covering. So clearly at this point, we know that we're dealing with some Shogun World hosts. And then he's yelling and complaining and we got to get out of here. And Maeve turns to him and says, you know, be quiet. And then all of a sudden we see a Shogun warrior, a full samurai outfitted with a katana running at the camera. And that's where it cuts to black. So, wow, we've seen little glimpses of Shogun World, but this is an actual samurai like getting ready to attack them. It's pretty cool stuff.
It was pretty terrifying seeing him come running out of the woods with that sword drawn. And, you know, we've been waiting since the finale of season 1, where we saw, you know, some models of them in the, I don't know, for lack of a better word, the repair shop.
Yeah, the repair shop.
But yeah, there's like, was there like 3 or 4 of them, like, or maybe more? I don't remember.
It was at least a couple of them. Yeah. And I know that's where we first got, in the finale, we got SW. So we knew that it was either called Samurai World or Shogun World. It is confirmed Shogun World. But yeah, we've actually seen one of them in action now. So I hope we see more of them. Like you mentioned earlier, I would love it if they started an episode with another like 10-minute segment of Shogun World.
Sure.
I really hope if they give it to us, it would be so cool to see. But without a doubt, we're going to see some more action from the Shogun Warriors. So this will be really neat. And we'll see if Maeve can control them. She can't control Ghost Nation, but I believe that's because they've been hacked and they're outside of her abilities. But if her programming is still the level that it was, you know, last season, she should be able to do her Jedi mind tricks and get that guy to, you know, freeze and fall out of the air or something.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Yeah, that's it for episode 3. Great episode again. I think it may be my favorite. There's so much going on. And we see old Dolores. We see great characters, great action, but also we hear some great dialogue and see some great performances. So I couldn't be happier with this one.
It was a great episode. It's hard for me to call it my favorite, because I'm a big fan of the Man in Black and sure. William's story. So the lack of him being in it was kind of offsets that for me a little bit, but I mean, it's still a great episode. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. We're definitely grading on a curve here. And it's like an A- is like the lowest level here. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, I may be being a little overzealous, but I mean, maybe like a B- is the bottom of the scale and an A+ is the top, you know? So when we say that this is the best, or I say that, it's compared to 2 other great episodes, but season 2 so far is excellent. We're only 3/10 of the way through it. We've got a lot more to come and a lot more theories and discussion, but that is it for today. Of course, we love the conversation between the other fans of the show and the listeners of this podcast. So please feel free to follow us at All the Spoilers on Twitter. Email us your questions, comments, theories, whatever, at theshowspoilers@gmail.com. Again, theshowspoilers@gmail.com. And join the League of Show Shares on Facebook. We'd love to have you there and talk about movies, other podcasts, television, you name it. So you can follow me personally at Kevin R. Brackett and on ReviewSTL.com. Brad, where can the folks find you?
I will try to tweet more at Heineken, HEYENIKIN on Twitter. And I do get involved in a lot of discussions and fun stuff in the League of Show Sharers on Facebook. So you can find me in there as well.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, it's been a pleasure as always. It's been a lot of fun talking about the show that we both love and everyone out there does as well. So send us your theories and we will talk to you soon.
All right, see you next week.